Welcome back, everybody. This is the podcast version of Zag Tracker with our amiable, hilarious, sometimes a little bit ridiculous host, Steve Cameron.
Our tracker.
Yep. How you doing, buddy?
I'm super. The way you said that, I thought, you know, you were going to say that I was the tracker, and it made me think of, like, somebody, a Native American back in the day, you know, leaning over, putting his ear on the ground to, you know, hear a bison 620 miles down the way. And I was going to say, let me get my ear on the carpet here and I'll tell you what's going to happen.
So,
can you do that?
he's a tracker. He's a tracker the way most of us are trackers. He's got a computer.
Yes.
But he does cover Gonzaga basketball, which happens to be what we're going to talk about today.
Happens to be the story of the moment.
With us here at the Coeur d'Alene Press also is Chance Watson. Chance is the editor of the Shoshone News Press, one of our papers, and he also produces these shows for us. Thank you, Chance.
Happy to do it, guys.
Feel free to pipe in anytime, especially if we go off the rails.
You can tell whether our podcasts sound professional or not by whether or not Chance is actually here. So when there's a clunker, just Chance was tied up.
Full disclosure, despite our best efforts, Steve, I think they rarely sound professional. Okay. I'm Mike Patrick. I'm the editor of the Coeur d'Alene Press. Steve and I have worked together. For over three decades. Gosh, Steve, I think it's almost four decades now. We've done sports road trips together. In fact, Steve was sitting next to me in Pocatello, Idaho, I don't know how many years ago, when I was almost ejected from the game watching NAU play Idaho State. That's a story for another time. But
Mike tried to call traveling from the press room.
You know, it was just one of these reactions when an Idaho State player, Don Holston, I believe it was, yep. Steve, you know, I don't mind a little travel, but when he's bringing the ball up court with seconds ticking off the clock in the first half, and I mean, I couldn't believe his waistband stretched far enough for him to tuck the basketball in and just sprint without bothering to dribble. It was a reaction. I'm sitting there on press row, and I started to make the circular travel.
Mike did what he would do in his living room, you know, to holler at the TV.
Well, when the refs don't see it, I got to point it out to him, Steve.
But I've got to tell you that the ref, he might not have seen the traveling call, but he definitely
saw me make the signal.
And he
threatened to throw me out of the game.
Who is this character? This is us.
It is us. And in fact, Steve, we are here to talk about Gonzaga basketball. And
we are? Oh, my gosh.
Well, I
should have done my homework on that then. I thought we were talking about the Cubs.
Oh, okay. Folks, we've just had a major programming change here. No.
Mike is a Cubby born and bred. And
a lunatic, yeah.
So, yeah, anytime we do a podcast in the future and we're stuck for the major story of the day, he can always default to the Cubs for you.
Well, and just one note on that, this addresses the track record Steve and I have together, possibly the greatest gift I've ever received. The first night game the Cubs ever played at Wrigley Field, Steve Cameron.
Well, he tried to play.
Yeah. He found a photographer who had taken some aerial shots of the lit-up stadium, and he had the photographer would only make three images from one frame, if I remember correctly, Steve.
Well, he wasn't planning to make any except for the one for the Cubs media guide, and I noticed there was this great shot, and I asked the Cubs administrative people, could I get a copy of it? They tightened me up with the photographer, and I asked him, could you make me two prints? And
so the photographer has one. Steve has one. He gave me one, yep, which is framed and hanging in my son's house in Portsmouth, England.
Right where you'd expect it.
Yep. You know,
proving that the Cubs nation has spread has all over the
has
world.
Has expanded. Yeah. Okay, Gonzaga basketball, Steve.
Yeah, what's going on with them this weekend? I mean,
they have a bye this weekend.
How are
they
doing?
You wrote your column today in the Press, which I thought was actually a pretty damn good effort. Addressed the hatred for Gonzaga out there, which I understand if you're the opponent that day, you're not going to care too much for Mark Few and the Zags. But your point really addressed, how is it that people can hate Gonzaga?
Well, I don't think it's Gonzaga as much as it is somebody that's stepping onto the stage and saying, hey, look at us, and is there anyone better than us? You know, if you were a Duke fan, you know, if you went let's say you went to Duke or to North Carolina, you know, for school, and you become a lifetime Duke fan, you know, you've taken a lot of abuse because people, you know, Duke's been good and really good, and they've had a lot of whiny characters that always want calls, and Coach K always wants calls and gets them in critical games. And so, you know, the rest of the college basketball world, most of them can't stand Duke. And Carolina's cheated and have been caught cheating in an academic scandal. And so everybody, you know, I mean,
it's just they don't want a new kid on the stage. They think the stage is full.
Well, they don't want anyone on the stage. That it's a lot easier to go after somebody who's successful. And I think, given our ages, we didn't really know how passionate those feelings were because there wasn't social media like we see now. Yeah. So you can just get on Twitter and see a thread that goes on and on and on forever and people arguing back and forth. I mean, and what bothers me is the ignorance of it. There was a guy this morning who said, you know, why don't the Zags get into a decent conference? That's why they just choke in the big dance all the time. Choke in the big dance. Excuse me, sir. They're in the Final Four, and for the second time in five seasons, and they've made it to the Sweet 16, you know, six times in a row, which is more than any other school in the country. So if you're gonna jump on Gonzaga, at least get your facts right.
Right.
You know, it's true that they play in a mid-major conference. It's not an embarrassingly bad conference, but you know, St. Mary's has had some good times. So has BYU. Gonzaga, as we all know, or you wouldn't be listening to this if you didn't know it, is shooting for two more wins to finish with an undefeated season, win the national championship undefeated, and there's very few schools that have ever done it, and one of them is a WCC school, which is the University of San Francisco,
yep,
which has a lot of distinguished alma mater. you were going to mention my
Steve,
time.
Steve, isn't that where you went?
Thank you. You took a long time to come up with that. I had to gag like I was dying there before Mike figured out.
I actually thought you might be dying right there.
And that was those were the glory days of Bill Russell. And then UCLA, which has done it four times,
yeah,
in the, you know, in the John Wooden era. And then there aren't many. North Carolina once when they beat Wilt Chamberlain and Kansas in the final. And
Indiana,
in 1976. But no one has done it since this tournament, the NCAA tournament, has been expanded to 68 teams, depending on whether you want to count the first four, which I guess we should now since UCLA is Gonzaga's opponent tomorrow night. And they have, in fact, gone from the first four to the, you know,
to the final four.
Final four. Although no team has ever won seven games, because the only other team that came from the first four to get this far was VCU in 2011, and they get beat in the semifinals. Right. So nobody's made it to the championship game.
Steve, and, you know, participate in something that I think gives you some insights that the rest of us are jealous about, and that is the Zoom press conferences that are done. And Steve and I talk all the time about, damn it, we wish this was a normal year so Steve could have been at the games in person throughout the season. That hasn't been possible. We've had to settle for Zoom press conferences.
Should say, though, that I've been to several of the home games.
Yeah. But it's different. I mean, it's completely different from
what you've
done your whole career.
I'll tell you how different it is. You have your own little table, the media. There's no fans. There's staff and things like that, a few. You have your own little table. And the situation is, after the game, instead of going down and being face-to-face with Mark Few, which I would have in previous years, and then going into the locker room and joshing around with the guys, with the fellas, you actually open up your laptop and you're on a Zoom call with Mark Few, who's like right over there, you know? I mean, but you can't talk to him.
It's not the same, but... and this is being recorded on Friday. I think this will probably be posted on Saturday. So, folks, you're going to be hearing this Saturday, Sunday, Monday, somewhere in there. But just a little while ago, Steve rushed to the Coeur d'Alene Press to do this show from a Zoom press conference. And I asked him, as a longtime journalist, we live for the great quotes, for the guy who stands up and says something outrageous or that you know is going to be your lead the next day. This one, the drum roll kind of fizzled.
Well, I mean, in part because one of the things, and maybe this is annoying to the basketball universe, is that Gonzaga insists on being humble.
Yeah.
Or sounding humble. Now, deep down in their hearts,
when you watch them play, the humility vanishes pretty quickly. But
have the there's
you're part in the column today about Timmy flexing and tweaking his stash and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that's not humble.
No, but. Oh, Timmy's a little different
character. I'm not criticizing him.
No, but we're in an era, and I mentioned this in my column, we're in an era when if an NFL defense just recovers a fumble, and balls just drop, this quarterback drops a snap from center, all 11 guys run over to this camera and do the Macarena.
Right, that they've been practicing. And what's hilarious, Steve, had I edited that column, I would have included this. They'll do that when they're down 42-7.
Oh, it's embarrassing.
That's what drives me crazy.
It's embarrassing.
So,
you know,
so just, Timmy is not in that class. But
no.
But back to the press conference.
Well, nothing, you know, I mean.
Are fans missing really good stuff by not being able to tune into
I would say more so during the regular season. When you get to the Final Four, there's a sense of awe in everybody, and you can kind of hear it. They know, I mean, they're favored. They'll be favored. They're favored by a huge number, 14 points against UCLA. If they win, and Baylor wins against Houston, which is not a given. Houston's strength happens to be Baylor's weakness. But Houston is a great offensive rebounding team, and Baylor is not a great defensive rebounding team. So that game that'll turn into a slugfest. There'll be blood on the floor in that game. But But let's say Baylor, the game everybody seems to want to
see.
We've won
it all year long.
Is Gonzaga and Baylor. And they've been kind of acknowledged as the top two teams. Well, Gonzaga's, they'll be favored in, if it is Baylor and it is Gonzaga. And I'm not saying this is a done deal.
Right.
Nothing.
But if it is,
right.
Gonzaga favored by six?
Something like that. Yep. Five or six. And so that makes them favorite in every game they've played. They've won 29 straight by double digits,
after
which
West
is
Virginia.
Staggering. And yep. No one's ever done it in the history of college basketball that the researchers can find. And I think it would be, I think it would have been all 30, actually, except that the West Virginia game, fans might remember, if you're really following the Zags closely, that was the game where Jalen Suggs went down in the first half. And I thought, and I think a lot of people thought, it was his Achilles.
Yep.
He reacted like it was his Achilles. And it was like,
there goes
sickening,
the season.
Yep. Sickening. This great team, and they're
but it ended up being merely a flesh wound.
Yeah, flesh wound, and the bullet went right on through, and he managed to play in the second half, but he really wasn't doing too much, but nevertheless, they come back and wipe out a halftime deficit and beat West Virginia by five. Other than that, they've just done everybody except BYU in the finals of the WCC postseason tournament. They were 12 down at the half, and I think Mark Few got up in them a little bit at halftime. But knowing these kids, I don't think he needed to. They came out having taken it as a personal insult that they were down 12, and the next thing you know, they're up 12. I mean, they just went after BYU, and teams, it's really funny. ESPN's Sean Farnham, who does a lot of Gonzaga games, made what I think he said this to be funny, but then he realized that there was some truth to it, or maybe it was worth talking about. And I love it. They were blowing somebody out. And he said, I wonder if they get bored.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought was happening in the second half of the USC game.
Yep.
There was no way they could lose, but they were starting to just throw the ball around like the Harlem Globetrotters. And Mark Few was incandescent with rage about it. I mean, he was Dana O'Neill from The Athletic, who's one of their national college basketball writers. Dana's a tremendous writer, used to work for ESPN, now with The Athletic. And she described that this one error that somebody, Joel Ayayi, made in the second half of the USC game. And she said that Mark Few jumped up and down with both feet like a toddler, who you'd taken his toy away or something. That's how upset he was. And that's Gonzaga. There's, if they play to their capabilities, I mean, there's nothing UCLA, for instance. I don't know about Baylor. I haven't seen Baylor challenged this way, but I will say, make the statement about UCLA. They can't beat Gonzaga.
They can make it ugly as hell, but
could they wind
they
up with
win.
More points at the end and advance to the title game? Yes, they could. But to do it, Gonzaga would have to do what Michigan did, and that is help them along the way pretty dramatically. Michigan didn't make a field goal in the last 5 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah. Steve, I want to take a little breather here because as you were talking, I was thinking about my friend Dave Eubanks, a retired teacher, one of the most intelligent people I know, huge Gonzaga fan. And every time.
What about me? You always tell me I'm the most intelligent.
I'm sitting with is the most intelligent.
Yeah, I was going to say, okay. Chance, is he telling you this too?
I can't say that I've heard it.
I think we're being conned. This is how Mike gets all these great jobs.
but Dave Eubanks was, he was so nervous. He's trying to enjoy this ride, but it's clear to me. And, Steve, you and I have been there. You held my hand in 1997 during the national championship game. When the Bears won the Super Bowl, I was beside myself.
That 1997 Arizona win in the national championship over Kentucky, Mike's not exaggerating the situation. I actually was physically holding his hand.
In overtime.
Yeah, it wasn't. This wasn't a figurative speech.
No,
you know. No,
no. I was beside myself, and I see some of that. Some of that with Dave Eubanks, and it just. I thought about it, Steve. Tuesday night, I missed the first half of the Zags Creighton game. I was here at work, and I timed it to drive home as fast as I could to Hayden to catch the second half. And I noticed
Tuesday
there
night,
was no
– excuse me. Tuesday night, they were playing USC.
Oh, that's right.
Was that
USC,
the game you mean?
Yep,
or the Creighton game before that?
Nope, it was USC. Zipping home, and what I noticed was there was almost no traffic. And that reminded me
– The Zags have our attention now.
The Zags have our attention in
the Inland Northwest.
But it just reminded me one of my favorite stories back when Arizona was a powerhouse. Our friend Adam Waters, who was the city editor at the paper and is now an attorney, Adam was having an NCAA tournament party at his house, and somehow we ran out of beer.
I couldn't do it.
Somehow we ran out of beer before halftime. Adam went to his wife, Jill, and said, Jill, honey, would you please? She goes, not a chance. So Adam cusses, gets in his little pickup truck, hustles to the grocery store, fills up a cart with cases and cases of beer.
Are you saying Jill wouldn't miss any of the game either?
That's right. And it was her husband's poor planning. So he fills up his cart with cases and cases of beer. He's looking left. He's looking right. He's sprinting to the one checkout line that's open. Nobody in sight. And at the last possible second, this little old lady steps right in front of him with one of the hand baskets full of cookies.
Well, she just has to be physically moved. I'm sorry,
well,
ma'am, but.
But Adam is such a gentleman. So he screeches to a halt. And the little old lady, you know, it takes about 6 seconds between one package to the next.
Yeah.
And she leans over to the woman at the checkout counter and she goes, sweetie, would you please hurry up? The second half's about to start. And Steve, that stuff was running through my head. We are reaching that nirvana for basketball fans where, at least in this neck of the woods, the world stops when Gonzaga plays, and this is the time we all should be relishing it rather than sweating bullets, don't you think, or do you disagree?
No, and I agree. The problem is, can we prevent ourselves from sweating bullets? No. That's why I had to hold your hand in 1997. That's why, I mean, I wasn't present for you when the Cubs came back and won, you know, won game seven of the World Series.
No, but I was on the phone with my son in England through the whole game.
Yeah.
It was dawn over there, and we were crying together.
Yeah, I mean, and sports shouldn't mean that much.
But it does.
Really.
I'm sorry.
And it does. And that works out okay if we have our lives in balance, you know. I mean, you don't want things like, for instance, I was reading a story when I lived in Scotland for several years, just so the listeners know. And while I was over there, the World Cup soccer tournament, which is by far the most watched thing in sports in the world, was going on. And I was reading a story in The Guardian, which is a newspaper published in London, but is read all over the world, basically. And The Guardian did an in-depth look at something which really kind of made me sick to my stomach, which was that while England was playing, the nights that England was playing, that there was a huge rise in domestic violence and things like that. That those
kind when they were playing or when they were losing? Just playing?
Just playing.
Oh, my God.
The stress, the, you know, why did
alcohol.
The ref – why? Yeah, alcohol. Yeah. Throw in alcohol in this and you've got a really volatile mix. And the World Cup, you know, if Gonzaga doesn't win this Final Four, they're going to have a really good team next year, come back and try it again. The World Cup, first of all, it's your nation involved.
Right.
And then secondly, it's only every 4 years, you know.
And a lot of the players will turn over.
Sure. But still, having said that, it's really sad that sports or anything actually can rile people up to the point that they will slap family members and just throw chairs out windows and whatever it is. And I wanted to say that before the Final Four starts, and this is my chance, that I hope that, I mean, one thing that's been written and said and written again and said again is that there's only two outcomes for Gonzaga. And this was said when the season started. There's only two outcomes for this season, winning it all
or disappointment.
Yeah. And Mark Few, just if you want to see a very very nice man just have his ears turn red, and that upsets him tremendously that people, as he said,
more than going fishing and coming up empty.
I think so, because he really believes in enjoying the journey of life and basketball as part of life. And as he said, not always looking at the end game, but having fun along the way. And so what I wanted to say before we actually see Gonzaga play UCLA and then hopefully Monday night in the championship game is that if they get upset, if they get turned over in an ugly game by UCLA and we're like beside ourselves because of the calls, I mean, Michigan got screwed kind of in the game against UCLA. Jay Billis from ESPN made a great point. He said, when you have a team like UCLA that grabs and clutches and holds and does all these things that are illegal, but they do them all the time in every game, the refs kind of get used to seeing it. And even though it's illegal and it's keeping the other team from getting into any flow, they don't call it. And it's, you know, they will try to do that to Gonzaga. Now, whether they'll be able to pull it off is another thing. But if Gonzaga gets upset, if they lose to Baylor or Houston in the championship game and they come like close to this historic season, but not quite, I mean, we should still be celebrating the year, the season, the joy that they've provided everybody. I mean, they've played, they not only have won and won and won, but they play a kind of basketball that is what you and I grew up dreaming of playing. Not, you know, not the skywalking stuff from the top of the key and 28 threes and things like that.
Steve, in your column, and you've said this to me a couple of times, you being one of the biggest soccer fans in the United States, but you have referred to the way Gonzaga plays as beautiful basketball.
It is.
Explain that a little bit. And especially, I mean, that's what aficionados say about soccer.
Yeah, well, soccer's called a beautiful game.
I mean,
and it, because of the patterns, the way, I mean, in Gonzaga's case, everyone that they put out on the floor understands basketball. They don't have many actual called patterns. They react to what the defense is doing and what their teammates are doing, and they read everything on the fly. And now you've got, no matter who's out there, you've got five guys who can all shoot, pass, dribble, handle the ball. They're, you know, Corey Kispert was asked about USC's zone before they played this really tall, athletic, and gifted USC team. And he said, we'll adjust. We'll find the ways. And he said, because we always do. We, you know, and that's kind of what gives me confidence that they might win it all, because no one has stopped them from doing what they want to do.
Well, it's a cliche, but the teamwork with this Gonzaga outfit,
unselfishness.
I've never seen a team more unselfish than this one. You know, another friend of mine, John Naccarato, both of his sons played college ball. Mm-hmm. One still is. His daughter Olivia is playing high school basketball. John's a coach. He is a student of the game. And Steve, one of the things we were talking about the other day and really trying to analyze, what is it that makes Gonzaga so good? Well, I think the average fan knows they shoot 63% or something insane like that from two-point range. And a lot of them are uncontested layups. What Knock pointed out to me was, and it's one of those you slap yourself in the forehead, it's so obvious, but Gonzaga gets so many uncontested layups because they cut better than any team I've ever seen. Well, the reason they cut is because they know their teammate is going to get them the ball.
And so many
teams, you cut your ass off over and over and over again, and you never see the ball.
Somebody wrote a great line, which is that Gonzaga turns down good shots in favor of getting a great shot. You know,
yeah.
I mean, and they do it quickly. They have the shortest possession time on the 30-second clock of any team in Division
One. 14 or 15
14.1 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, so they don't hang on to it. As Javon Suggs said after they beat USC, he said, we can never let the ball get sticky. We've got to move it, move ourselves, and move the ball, you know. And they do it at breakneck pace, and they,
Steve, that's what's the most fun.
Yeah,
I mean, it's almost a baseball analogy. A team in the field, if you've got a pitcher who's smoking a cigarette and drinking a Coke in between pitches, your defense is going to get lackadaisical. Fans hate that. Players hate
that. Yeah, of course.
But Gonzaga plays hard and fast. That's what we all wish we could do.
They run, you know, what you would call a fast break, a transition offense off of made baskets.
Yeah.
I mean, the other team will make a bucket, and they're used to scoring and kind of
jogging back.
Yeah, and running backwards a little bit and watching. I mean, and Timmy is 6'10", and he's outrunning everyone, and he's at the basket, and all of a sudden, the ball's being dunked at the other end.
You know, and Steve, I got to ask you, when I watched Drew Timmy, I mean, he to me is the consummate college basketball player. I look at him, I laughed because you referred to him flexing and stuff. Sorry, the guy is one of the least muscular.
He looks like a goof.
He does. But I also remember Larry Bird when he played college basketball. What is it that makes Timmy, and Bird was not a specimen. What is it that makes Drew Timmy one of the best college basketball players?
All right. He is, first of all, for a guy who is 6'10", and as you say, not a specimen. He is not Zion Williamson or somebody. But he can run like a deer. He can handle the ball. If you remember the USC game, the first two possessions, he got steals and just took it out himself.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he would normally let somebody else do it, and then he would fill a lane and maybe be on the end of it. But there was nobody there, so he just took these guys one-on-one. If I could pick one thing, though, I would say it's his footwork, and combine that with an understanding of the game to where he understands that no one, so far anyway, has been able to stop him man-to-man. He just has too many moves. And depending on what you do, he'll spin the other way. He'll go up and under the basket. He can use either hand. And so he knows that teams will bring help to kind of force him not to go to his right, say, when he's got the ball in the low post. Even before he gets it, Drew knows where the help's going to come from. He knows what you're doing on defense.
Yeah.
And he knows that Corey Kispert's going to be standing by himself in the corner, and he knows what's going to happen from there, all before he gets the ball. Something that I would ask viewers of the game Saturday night, tonight, whenever you hear this podcast, against UCLA, and then hopefully in the finals, something that really isn't brought up much. The Zags get a lot of layups. Guys drive to the basket and seems like the Red Sea parts, and Jalen Suggs is just blowing in there. Suggs brought up the fact that one reason that the Red Sea has parted is because Drew Timmy has parted it. He gets between a big man at the basket and what they call, if you haven't heard this phrase or you don't know it, you didn't play the game, he does what's called ducking in, and he ducks in and clears that space.
Basically a moving screen sort of thing, but
it's he's just in the way, and you can't, you know, and so, and as I said, he understands the game. When he sees Jalen Suggs start to make a move to the basket, again, this is the beauty of Gonzaga. He already knows which way. He can see all the chess pieces on the floor, and he knows which way Jalen's going to go, so he knows which way to get on the side of, say, Evan Mobley, to take Mobley out of the play because he's going to be in the way, and he just gives Suggs or Nembhard or Kispert, whoever it is, a lane to the basket.
Yep.
And all of them understand these nuances, and Mark Few has said over and over, none of this would work if these guys didn't have this phenomenal basketball IQ. Plus, they
also happen to be one of the best coached teams in
the
country.
Yes, they are. They are. And they want it badly. As humble as they sound between games, you know, I think I've used this phrase. I know I've written it. I don't know if I've said it on the podcast. But when you go into the Gonzaga locker room, right when you go in the door, there's a big plaque and thing that celebrates their 2017 appearance in the Final Four. But above that is a framed, huge framed quote from Jay Billis, who is really a knowledgeable guy. And what Billis said, and I may be missing, I may get a couple words out of order here, but what Jay said was they shake hands, they go to class, they say please and thank you, but when you throw the ball up, they'll cut your heart out and watch you bleed. and there's a ruthlessness to Gonzaga that as individual people, you wouldn't see it if you were in class with them or if you met them in any other setting. But between the lines, they'll take you out, Steve, if necessary.
Steve, we've talked in these podcasts quite a bit about Mark Few, and we even speculated a couple of times ago that Mark will retire when he feels like retiring. Nobody knows what that looks like. His heir apparent isn't just apparent. His contract says,
says Tommy Lloyd. Yep, Tommy Lloyd will be the next assistant coach.
But a couple of developments are in play right now. Again, by the time people listen to this, there might be some resolution, but
there'd be a rumor out there.
Maybe the most prestigious coaching job in college basketball is open, with Roy Williams announcing his retirement at North Carolina. It took about 4 seconds for rumors to start about Mark Few. About the same time, Kansas gives Bill Self a lifetime contract. And just in my crazy little brain, I'm thinking, what if North Carolina dangled something like a lifetime contract offer to Mark Few?
Mark Few's not going anywhere, to North Carolina or anywhere else, because, as he has said, why mess with happy? He is absolutely enjoying his life. He loves the area. I think you know, and I think we've mentioned that, you know, he's built a house on Hayden Lake, and he loves the fishing streams that he won't tell you exactly where they are, where the fish are. He likes the pace of life. He likes the way that everything about Gonzaga University and how he's been treated. And
Steve, let's be honest here too. He is not in Spokane, Washington. He's not in a pressure cooker. And folks, this reminds me of another grocery store story. Steve and I, in 1994, traveled to Tucson and met with Lute Olson. And Lute told us the story, at least part of the reason he left Iowa, a Final Four team at Iowa, and took over one of the crappiest programs in the country at University of Arizona. And the story, I'm making this short, but the story really involved Iowa had lost a game on a Saturday night, and the next morning, Lute's wife, Bobby, is at the grocery store.
Being yelled at. Yeah.
Well, somebody slams into her cart, and Bobby looks up, and the woman who assaulted her, grocery cart to grocery cart, says, "Well, I'm surprised to see you out today," because Iowa had lost a game. And that really was the impetus to Lute Olson deciding he had had enough of Iowa City. That's not the case with Mark Few. And also, Steve, you know, some coaches will leave a mid-major program believing they have to go bigger to have a chance to win it all. Mark Few has already proved that's not the case with him.
And this didn't just come up in the last couple of years. Few and the athletic director, Mike Ross, have believed all the way back to the Cinderella, the slipper still fits team of 1999 that got to the Elite Eight and kind of Gonzaga came out of nowhere with Don Monson coaching Mark Few as his assistant. They had a vision back then that we don't have to go anywhere to try to win at all. We can build this thing and ultimately win it all here. And the administration backed them and backed that vision by, I mean, donors showed up, but the school backed the vision, built the McCarthy Athletic Center so they'd have a great place to play.
They their flights are chartered. I mean, they travel like the big boys.
Yeah, they do. And you should see the Volcker Center, the which is right adjacent to the kennel, the McCarthy Athletic Center. And the Volcker Center is where they practice, the weight rooms, all kinds of medical things. And it's, I mean, I can't believe there's a more beautiful and it's workable facility in the country. So, I mean, no one's coming out here to, you know, to go into a locker room and get splinters on their backside, you know, at this little school. Gonzaga has first class everything now, and deservedly so. I mean, I hate to bore everybody, but by talking about actual college educations, but the truth is,
what's that?
I know you had to work for yours. The school was in dire straits back when this basketball phenomenon started to happen. If you're new to the area and you don't know the Gonzaga story, you should read one of the pieces that's been written about it, because they gambled that the men's basketball program could put the school on the map enough to where they would get more, you know, non-basketball, non-student athlete, you know, admissions, because they were losing money. There was a chance that Gonzaga might have to close its doors. And instead, I don't know why this is, actually.
But it's a fact.
Why kids want to go to school at a place where you win. I mean, although, honestly,
I think it's attractive, and then you look at the other things. You don't go there because.
I guess. Also, boy, if you're in the kennel, that's one whole side that's just basically all students.
Yeah.
They are having fun. I mean, and they are jumping up and down in rhythm nonstop, and you know, when there's a dunk or Kispert hits another three, they're going crazy and they've got their faces painted and they have fun. And I could see that a chemistry major might be attracted to that kind of enjoyable college experience. And the other thing is that Spokane is exactly the right size community for this to happen, I think. It really is.
There's no other competition, really.
No. It would be hard to have this sort of the kennel experience in Seattle. I mean, I'm not saying that UW, if they got great, wouldn't sell out and the kids wouldn't be
jumping
up and down.
They also have a population base 30 times Spokane's.
But there's something about the size of Spokane and where it's located, and you know, if you haven't seen folks, if you haven't seen Jimmy Kimmel's shtick about he doesn't believe there's actually a university.
Yeah, I've seen that.
That Gonzaga is just it's a basketball team that just shows up at the end of the season to play in the tournament and then disbands. That he said, seriously, can you find me somebody who went to Gonzaga to school? He said, I don't think there's actually a school there. And obviously he knows differently, but it has become known for this program. I mean, you're talking about the first team ever to win 30 games or more, five straight seasons. That's a lot of wins.
It is.
And I know that they get a lot of kind of freebies in the WCC because it's not the Big Ten or the Big 12 or whatever. But still, they have to beat a lot of people along the way to do it. And here we are with a chance to make history and to go undefeated, to be 32-0, which happens to be exactly the same record as Indiana had in 76. And what that has brought out are all the people claiming, well, even if they do it, I mean, they're not one of the great teams of all time.
Now, Steve, that you wrote that today, and that blows me away. How can you possibly say that?
Well, first of all, I love the people that say they couldn't compete with the Akeem Olajuwon, Clyde Drexler team, which won nothing, by the way. They never won the NCAA tournament. I mean, so how do they get into the conversation of great teams of all time? You know,
Steve, have you ever seen a college basketball team this good that's this deep? That's the thing that gets me. Gonzaga rolls out the third man off the bench, the fourth man off the bench.
Basically, they're down to seven now.
But quality all the way through, if they ever did reach a point where Cook has to step in and keep them alive.
Or even, you know, I don't know if anyone noticed this, but right near the end of the first half against USC, Timmy had just gotten his second foul.
Yeah.
So they don't want him out there. There's like 54 seconds left, yep, or something like that. They don't want him getting his third foul. And USC had the ball out of bounds under the basket that they were shooting at. So you've got to have some size out there. Or they're just going to lob it to one of the Mobleys. You got to have somebody that you're not going to be frightened if they get a foul.
Right.
And whatever. And here, out of nowhere, comes Ben Gregg, who was in high school. You know, he should be getting ready to graduate from high school. And he, you know, enrolled a semester early. He's developed really well. And they can use him as a plug-in piece for certain things. Now, obviously, his game will evolve and he'll do a lot of really neat different things down the road. But the fact that he was in the game in the Elite Eight, I noticed it right away, and I thought he's in because few thinks that USC is going to run a certain play coming off the baseline because they've seen it on tape or something. And Greg was told what that was, and he checked in and checked with each of the other four guys and said, by the way, this is what coach, you know, they're going to run this, that, the other. And they stopped them. They clogged everything up. So the depth is there. They just don't need to go further than seven because in the tournament, the media timeouts are so long that you can kids get enough of a breather that you can almost go with a really short.
Yeah, even if they're playing 35, 36 minutes, there's enough breaks in there. Okay.
Yeah.
Last thing for this show. I want your predictions, and we're going to have to do some assuming here, and forgive me if I am putting the whammy on anybody, but Gonzaga, UCLA, and then let's go ahead and visualize the game we've all wanted since the season started, Gonzaga-Baylor.
I think it's pretty simple. If Gonzaga plays its A game, they're going to win the national championship. And Baylor would, if it is Baylor, Baylor would have to play its A game and get some help, foul trouble, something, Kispert going 0 for 7 from 3, you know, I mean, missing, you know, a whole bunch of layups that roll around and come off. They'd need some help. Not because they're not a good team. When I say UCLA would need help, they would need a massive amount of help. And I don't mean that to diss UCLA.
No, they're also missing possibly their two best players.
Well, and you know, they've come all the way from the first four to where they are now, and credit for that. I mean, they're
no disrespect. No disrespect anymore.
No. You can't get to the Final Four by accident. You can't just kind of stumble into it. They beat a number 2 seed Alabama and a number 1 seed Michigan to do it. Now, if they turned it into what Jay Bill has called a rock fight to do it, well, they did it. And Michigan,
the only way they could happen. They did what the only way
exactly.
They could win.
So no disrespect to UCLA, but Gonzaga would have to just really be off for them to lose that game. So I hate to assume any sports event ever, but let's, you know, like assuming that the Mariners were going to lose their opener last night where they're down, you know, 6 runs in the 8th inning, you know, and you think, well, it was fun, but we're back in the old Seattle Mariners, so I guess I'll turn the TV off, and then you look in the Coeur d'Alene Press this morning, and, the Mariners seem to have won the opener last night, you know, so you can't just say this is a cinch, but I think Gonzaga against UCLA it's close to a cinch. I think UCLA will be harder to deal with than USC was, because USC thought they had the whole thing set up perfectly.
Well, you said it a week or so ago, frankly, that USC is not the best coached team in college basketball. And I think Mick Cronin at UCLA is a really good coach.
And he's gotten the most out of what he has. Yep. And by the way, there was just an announcement that Juwan Howard of Michigan won the National Coach of the Year award. Mark Few was second. This is Juwan Howard, who Michigan loses to UCLA, and to this moment, I'm wondering why, when they need a basket to tie or go ahead at the end of the game, Michigan doesn't go to Hunter Strickland, their NBA player in the middle who's 7'1", and instead they have him take the ball out of bounds and be no part of the last two possessions. So that's the guy who won the award ahead of Mark Few. Excuse me if I think that's wrong, but anyway, I think we're going to assume here that they beat UCLA, the Zags. So are you also assuming that Baylor beats Houston?
I am assuming it.
Okay.
Houston, nothing against Houston, but all of their tournament wins have been against double-digit seeded teams. Mm-hmm. I just don't think they've seen anything like Baylor. And I think Scott Drew is one of the best coaches in the game. I don't believe in destiny, Steve. I'm not that kind of guy. But this is the storybook ending. I can't see any other possibility.
Well, fans of the game have been waiting to see Gonzaga Baylor all year. I would just say this. If Gonzaga plays as they can.
Boy, you sound like a coach now. They are the best team in the country.
Yeah, they are. And that's what I'm trying to say in a diplomatic way, that if Gonzaga plays as they can, they're the best team in the country, and so they'll beat anybody in the country. They would have to help Baylor out. And they, so far, have you seen them helping anybody out? You know,
they've been helping pull the hearts out, but cut
your heart out and watch it bleed. I mean, it's an interesting matchup because both teams are really deep and really good at guard.
And that was one of your thoughts with USC that
Baylor, on the other hand, has no real offensive threat in the middle. They have some beefy characters who will pound you and things like that, but they're kind of just thugs who are trying to get the ball. They play good defense, and they're trying to get the ball to these three guards, Davion Mitchell and Gerard Butler and Maceo Teague. And, okay, so Gonzaga will see your three great guards.
And raise you,
Drew Timmy, in the middle. And Baylor hasn't faced anybody like Drew Timmy. Frankly, in college basketball, nobody's faced anybody like Drew Timmy. He's kind of a one-off, you know? I can see Baylor rotating big guys who all have three fouls and then all have four fouls. And the one thing that gives me a little bit of wonder and worry, whatever you want to call it, is Timmy has had little stretches, short stretches, where he hasn't looked quite as good shooting free throws. And I think if they play Baylor, I think he'll wind up shooting a ton of free throws. He needs to shoot 75%. If he shoots 75%, I think they just beat Baylor. See you later. Thanks. Thanks for playing. And, you know, drive safely on your way home. And meanwhile, we'll stand here under the confetti. You know, I mean, that's where I'm going with this. If Gonzaga plays well and does the things that they've done all year, I think they're going to win the national championship, finish 32-0, and step into history.
Well, then I think we've got a deal. And, Steve, let's agree right now we'll be back next week.
Oh, yeah.
No matter what happens.
Yeah, we have to parse it all out.
That's right.
I was going to ask you, we'll talk about this later, but if they beat UCLA, do we maybe have to get together and do something on Monday with that game coming Monday night? But we can talk about that later. But we'll let you know in the online and in the print edition of the press what we're doing. But this is an exciting few days. If you can't get thrilled and revved up by this, you're not really a basketball fan.
This is what
these kids have been dreaming about their whole lives. Jalen Suggs never mentions the NBA. He said, my whole life I've been dreaming about playing college basketball and being in a big, big game. And he said, and I'm living my dream.
Let's do some dreaming the next few days here, and we'll be back with a podcast either Monday or shortly thereafter. And this is Mike Patrick for Steve Cameron, Chance Watson, and on behalf of the Coeur d'Alene Press and Zag Tracker, wishing everybody confetti dreams.
Zag up.